This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.
I'm Lynn Power. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Mossamy. We are a clean premium hair care brand that just launched in February, right before COVID. And what I love about beauty is it has the ability to transform not just your physical, but your emotional and mental well-being too. Unlike a lot of other categories I worked in, which don't do that.
Consumers don't realize how toxic most hair care is. After all, the vast majority of hair care in the U.S. has some toxic ingredients. Coming up, you'll hear from the founder of a brand that launched with the idea that you don't have to trade off clean beauty and health for performance. It's a modern direct-to-consumer brand with both e-commerce and salon and brick-and-mortar partnerships.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Hi, Lynn. It's terrific to see you here on the Beauty is Your Business podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we're here with Karen Moon, my fantastic co-host.
Hi, everyone. Excited to be here.
Hey.
So, Lynn, you've had such an incredible career, and I'm really fascinated to look a little bit into your background and see that you are the president of one of the largest advertising agencies in the world. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey and how you transitioned from being in the advertising world to the beauty space. Can you take us a little bit into that journey through the years?
Yeah. Sure, I'm happy to. So I, as you mentioned, I spent a long time, 30 years, in the advertising world in creative agencies. The last job I had was CEO of J. Walter Thompson New York, and prior to that, I was president of another agency, Arnold. And I didn't plan on getting into advertising, actually. I didn't go to school for it. I was actually wanting to go into the FBI. When I graduated from college, which there was a hiring freeze, which I think was probably good for the FBI and good for me too. I ended up getting a job as a receptionist at an ad agency. And I just really loved it. I love the culture. I loved the idea of using creativity as a way to solve business problems. And I liked the idea that you could work on lots of different businesses. You know, you don't have to just go deep in one thing. And that's sort of basically how my brain works. I'm a multitasker extraordinaire, and I like to work on lots of things, and I like to juggle lots of things, and I like to blend everything together. It's kind of messy, but that's the way it is. So for me and my personality, it was a really good fit. So I did it for a really long time, and I worked my way up, and I went from sort of, you know, running accounts and doing that side of it to running agencies, which is a very different job, by the way. You know, when you're running an agency, you're not doing the fun creative work anymore. You're dealing with all the HR and finance things, which was not really my jam. But anyway, so I had been doing it. I was at JWT. We had a very public Me Too lawsuit actually happen that kind of kicked off the Me Too movement in advertising, which was well overdue, by the way. You know, a lot of the time that I was in the industry, very testosterone heavy, I had mostly male bosses, and it needed that. But I was the one who unfortunately had to deal with most of it. my boss, the global CEO, was basically ousted. And I had, you know, press and lawyers and clients and all sorts of stuff for about 2 years until the lawsuit was settled. And when it finally got settled, I was kind of like, you know, I'm really, really not having fun anymore. This is not what I like to do. But yet I love building brands, and I love, you know, creating something out of nothing. And I love adding value and making an impact. And instead of doing it for someone else and making someone else a lot of money, you know what, I'm just going to do what I want to do. So I kind of took a moment where I was just being really selfish. And it worked out great because I ended up leaving. I started a brand consultancy. I was working with startups, helping them with their brand story, brand narrative. And then I met my hair care partner, James. And, you know, sometimes the universe just presents things to you and you can't say no. And that's sort of how this happened. So I actually met him through my husband, who was also in advertising at the time and had been working on, James and Bill had been working together. And James had pulled Bill aside one day and said, "Hey, I've been working on these hair care formulations for a really long time. And I think I finally got them to a place where they're really good, but I don't know what to do." Like, he's not a brand guy. He's not a marketer. He doesn't know how to launch products. So Bill has never really worked in beauty, nor wanted to. And so he said, "Oh, you've really got to talk to Lynn." Now, I've had this experience throughout my career where, like I said, I love working on lots of different things, but I've always gravitated back towards beauty. I worked, actually, this is really showing my age, but when I was at BBDO, it would have been the late 90s, I guess, or early 2000s. We launched Gillette Series hair care for men. And this was at the time, if you guys recall, like the talk about male grooming and metrosexuals. And it was literally like all the articles were like, "It's taking off, it's taking off." And then, of course, it's been slow to take off to the degree that everyone predicted. But we actually launched a hair care product for men. It did not survive. I think it was before its time. But then I ended up, you know, working on L'Oreal. I did all their hair business. I worked on Clinique. I've worked on Vichy. I've worked on Nexxus. I've just worked on a lot of different beauty brands throughout my career. And it's just always something I've really loved. So when James, you know, basically when we met and he told me the story of how he'd been working on these formulations, first I thought he was crazy because that was my initial reaction, was like, who does that? Who works on something for 10 years without really knowing what to do? Okay. Well, okay. This is the thing.
I do that. I have to say.
But this was my conclusion. You're either crazy or you're a genius. So maybe you and James are both geniuses. I don't know. But I don't know. Well, I just think it takes a very specific personality to be able to dig in, lean in, continue to tweak, evolve, tweak some more. Oh, now there's more ingredients available. Tweak some more. Oh, now the EU's banned this one. Tweak some more. You know what I mean? And he basically used all of his discretionary income to do this, which, you know, most people would be like, but you didn't even know if you're going to be able to launch it or what you're going to do with it. But I think he just knew that he could create these products that would be super hydration and clean. And this was, you know, again, 12 years ago now, because he worked on it for 10 years and then it took us almost 2 years to get it ready for launch. But, you know, his instincts just told him that this needed to be made. And, you know, he had worked at Clairol for a long time and he was like an Uber producer. So he was the guy in charge of booking a lot of the models and hearing them complain and bitch about how fried their hair was after it was colored and then colored back. So, you know, he kind of had this frontline view of the problem. Yeah.
So, Lynn, I mean, you know, there's been a huge surge of like premium hair care and clean. But what was it about this brand that was different? And obviously James's passion, but what else was it that shifted from someone you would just advise to actually joining the team and creating something? Like, what was special about it that just struck you?
Well, I love the story he told me. He had found the ingredient through his husband, Masa, hence Masami, because Masa is really our muse, which, by the way, also means truly beautiful in Japanese. And James had been going back to Masa's hometown of Atsuchi in Northeast Japan, and he had found this ingredient. And I love the whole story of how he put it all together. But what really sold me was I tried the product. And I'm like super cynical because I've worked on a lot of crap products or products that just really didn't have a point of difference. And you're trying to make something out of nothing and you're trying to kind of manufacture a reason for being. I mean, we relaunched Vive. Like I was like, I think I relaunched it the fourth or fifth time that it had been launched. And that's a brand I think still trying to figure that out. But I tried the products and I was really impressed because it, first of all, I'm not easy to impress when it comes to products and performance. And what I just really appreciated about it was the elegance of the formulations is that they're very luxurious and they're very hydrating, but they're not heavy and they're clean. So it was kind of like, how did you manage to do all that, you know? And that to me was the starting point, because I think these days beauty is so crowded, as you guys know, that you just, you know, and lots of brands are launching all the time because the entry into launching is just a lot easier for an indie, anyone to do it really. But I think it's really about, you have to have a really, really good product to start. And then of course, telling the story and the marketing and the strategy and the distribution and all that stuff, you know, makes a difference. But the core is the product.
So just to kind of circle back for our audience, because we haven't really introduced the brand, like how would you describe it in like two sentences?
So Masumi's clean premium hair care with a Japanese ocean botanical called Makabu for massive hydration. That's what we are. And hydration is the number one unmet need for pretty much everybody. And we also figured out that when you solve hydration for people, you solve a lot of their other hair complaints. Their hair is more manageable. It has more volume. It's shinier. It's healthier. You know, it's pretty much, you know, everything else that they were grumbling about goes away when, you know, they just haven't realized that that was sort of the core root of some of the other things going on.
Can you dive in a little bit more into the ingredient story? Because I think it's really interesting. It's different. And, you know, there's a social impact component. Would love to like dive into that a little bit more.
Yeah. So our hero ingredient called Makabu, and it grows in Northeast Japan as part of the wakame seaweed. And it's basically like the nutrient dense flowering part at the bottom of wakame. James would go back to Masa's hometown. They've been together for about 14 or 15 years. And he's a very curious person anyway, but he was very, taken aback at just how different the diet is and how much of these seaweeds are making their way into both like staples of everyday eating, but also Masa's family would grind up and put in their hair care and their skincare, some of these seaweeds. And so it was just a different behavior. And I think part of what James was really blown away by is when you actually meet Masa's family and they look so young. And by the way, Japan has the longest life expectancy in the world. So you start to put these little data points together going, wait a minute. There's something to this diet that is really compelling, and the West just really hasn't caught on fully. I mean, we eat kale, they eat seaweed, you know what I mean? So
superfood.
So that was sort of the aha for him. But then the trick was, okay, we know that seaweed intuitively, most people believe intuitively it's good for you, but how do you harness that and put it in hair care? There's a couple things that had to happen. First is when you take out all the bad stuff, the sulfates, the parabens, and the phthalates, those are usually the things that create a feeling of performance, whether it's suds, whether it's the thickness, and that's what US consumers are used to. So you have to figure out how to replace those things with other good for you things to still create a feeling of performance, because otherwise you end up being a very thin and watery, clean brand, but not very luxurious. And there are a lot of brands like that on the market where they take out the bad stuff and it just kind of eh. So that was the first challenge, is putting positive, good, ingredients that were going to help the performance back in to complement the Makabu. But then the other challenge was we kind of figured out Makabu basically acts like a sponge. I mean, if you think about it, it's a water plant essentially. And it basically brings this hydration to your hair, but how do you put it in your product without it being a very heavy formulation? You can see that my hair is very thin and colored. So if I try to use like super hydrating products, my hair just looks greasy. Yes, it's hydrated, but it doesn't look very good. So what we ended up doing is figuring out, our chemist figured out that we could put the Makabu in our formulations in a powder format as opposed to an extract. Extract is the more common way people infuse ingredients. And if you put it in powder format, you can cram more of it in and get and give you that that hydration benefit, but without the weight. So that was sort of another like aha moment where, you know, we realized that. And then, so what we do now is we actually get our Makabu from a family owned seaweed company in Northeast Japan that we went and visited. They'd never used it for beauty before. They are all about food. So when we went and talked to them, and they don't speak English, so Masa was our interpreter. And we went and explained what we were trying to do. They were like, oh, that's super interesting. Yes, we would love to do it. We've never done that before. So they harvest the Makabu for us, they dry it, and then they pulverize it down to our specifications, and then they ship it to us. Our chemist is in Chicago, and then we make everything, you know, here in the US.
Wow, that's such a fantastic story. I love when we hear about an ingredient somewhere else in the world that's being powered for another category, and then it finds its way into the beauty industry and really adds value to a whole other area, you know, to bring to the masses. So congratulations on that.
As an American, there is no greater privilege and responsibility than choosing who will represent you and your family to determine the course of history, your lives, the economy, your health, your safety. On November 3rd, please choose to vote. To vote early, or if you need an absentee or mail-in ballot, please visit vote.org. Your future self thanks you.
I'm very curious to know, with your, I'm really focused on the advertising background, you know, the pivot from media to being a brand founder, owner, and now launching. I'd love for you to share with our audience a little bit about how you're looking at the marketing and the advertising of this new brand in today's day and age, because that really is from your knowledge of being in the advertising industry for so many years, the landscape is completely disrupted. What are you thinking, and how are you reaching the customer and your audience in a new and fresh way? How are you thinking about that?
It's a really good question, because it's always evolving, by the way. The marketing landscape changes so fast these days that, you know, just keeping up with the latest algorithms and social media is like a feat in and of itself. But anyway, we launched as what I call a DTC plus brand. The reason I'm saying DTC plus is, you know, we wanted to be DTC, direct to consumer, but it's my belief that I don't think it's enough. I think you need to have the opportunity to have people touch, smell, see, experience your product. And especially when you're in beauty, I think that's super critical. So our strategy was, our core is DTC, but we have a few partners, a few, as well as some brick and mortar that are just really good, like-minded partners that help us get that bigger story out there. So that was always the strategy. We launched, as I mentioned, in February at New York Fashion Week, but then, and we were in conversations with several salons, and then the salons all went on hold. So that required a little pivot as well, because suddenly we're going to have to wait several months to activate that part of our plan. So what we did is we just went back to the DTC playbook, which is really about digital acquisition and content creation and creating engagement with our customers. So we really focused on building advocates and controlling what we could control, which is our own content. So we're very active on social. We are on YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, Facebook. We even have a TikTok account, but I have not done anything on it yet because my kids have like put the fear of God in me that I will embarrass myself. So that one is kind of waiting, but we do blog posts every week. We're doing videos constantly. We live stream. We're on Talk Shop Live. So part of, I think, what you have to do as a modern brand is really embrace some of these new platforms. And we're on a bunch of them that allow you to tell a deeper story and engage with consumers in a different way. And I really think this notion of, you know, live streaming shopping is where I see a lot of the technology headed, where, you know, you can live stream and buy right from there. So as I mentioned, we're on Talk Shop Live, which is a live streaming platform. I don't know if you know it. It's sort of like a modern QVC, but we're also on Spin Live. We're on Cargo. We're on a number of other platforms that, that I think are also trying to see, you know, how they can win in that space. And my attitude is you have to experiment. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not a lot of time and money, because you don't want to, you know, we have a small team. I can't suck my resources, but I think you have to put yourself out there and see what sticks and be willing to double down on the things that are working and walk away from the things that aren't working. And I think we're going to see a couple of these platforms we're on emerge mm-hmm. and become bigger. And some of them, one of them we were on already has like fallen off by the wayside. So,
well, that's you know. Let's dive into live streaming more. It's been one of the hottest commerce trends. Like, you know, Shop Shops has been very big in China, but it's one of those areas that have been tested and proven in other markets, but has still some opportunity here. Like, what was the experience like for you and your brand? And how do you see that evolving consumption here, whether it's through one of these platforms or Instagram Live? What's your point of view on that?
Well, I just think video in general is the future. That's where, you know, you're going to get more engagement. That's where you're going to just be able to, like I said, tell a deeper story. So it's only natural that live stream would be kind of, you know, at the front of that. So we've had to learn because I don't love doing video myself. Like, I'm not super comfortable doing that, but my partner is great. He's very intense and he's very passionate. But his problem was that he used to just be like, blah, 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 like talk for like 20 minutes straight and sometimes veer off into really random things and not stay on sort of point. So we started doing some of these platforms, some of them smaller ones too, as a way for him to really get comfortable, get used to telling the story, get used to being on camera. We were doing a few live webinars and we were doing like, we do a Beauty of Seaweed meetup. And it was all kind of like, we just have to get our story down to a place where, you know, it's working really well and he's really comfortable. And now I think actually not this week, but next week we're on Talk Shop Live at 5:30 on Thursday. So you can actually go on and see him, but he's gotten really good at it. It's like a muscle. It takes practice. So I think, you know, there are a lot of other brands that we're partnered with now, like other beauty brands and stuff. And I always try to coach the founders to try this. It's one of those things that it's an acquired taste. A lot of founders don't want to do it.
Interesting. So this is the founder talking versus like an influencer talking about your brand, which is a little bit different than some of
the ones I've seen.
But no, that's interesting because there's the more of the founder story.
You know, it's an art meets science, right? Because all of these years, my background is media and entertainment, and I have a new brand out actually as well in the fragrance category. So it is very interesting to see. And this is something I've been focused on for 15 years, is the convergence, the true convergence of all mediums, but not looking at it as just media, but looking at it as an opportunity to converge and reach the consumer in wherever they are, right? So today, it's not about the distribution model of going out and building your brand and your platform and reaching millions of eyeballs. It's literally reaching that customer, that audience, wherever they are, so they can tap into your story and your voice and your brand. So I'm actually seeing some very interesting things happen as well. And it really is a numbers game. You follow the numbers and you see where the engagement in it. Mm-hmm. So it's very compelling and very, where I'm sitting right now, I think it's so exciting because it's something I've been focused on for many, many years to see it finally happening. But you're right, things that are, there'll be a bump and then all of a sudden it just falls off. Like, what happened to that technology? So, you know, these things take a lot of energy to run and to build, but it is an art too. You know, the founders, the influencers, it's a skill that you practice over many years.
Well, that's interesting.
I'm totally on your page.
It's interesting because if you look at social media, so much of it is that you don't want to be selling, and it's almost like, how do you create, you know, a lifestyle thing, but whereas, or native advertising, you know, but like where you're not trying to sell the brand. But then with these, you know, live streaming shopping, it's really all about selling, you know, and there is a place for it. And, you know, QVC, HSN continues to live on. And it's like almost like that for the next generation, where it just hasn't existed for the younger audience.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's a really exciting medium to continue to track. It's already working like huge in Asia. It'll be interesting to see how it adopts here in the US, because then, you know, you just get to learn more about a brand. And, you know, like at the end of the day, we're discovering on social media, but we're still trying to understand like the properties and the value prop, the mission behind brands. And sometimes it's hard to do when it's just like pretty pictures on Instagram. So it's kind of cool.
Well, you're so right about
that. Well, that actually supports one of our findings, is that it takes our customers 7 touch points before they convert. And I think the reason why is exactly what you're saying. Like, if you're only giving them little tiny bits of the story, they might be intrigued, but it's not enough to push them over the edge. You know what I mean? So that's one of the reasons that we're doing a lot of different things. So, you know, we're on social, we're really active. We do our blogs, we do our live streams, we do podcasts, we do sampling. I'm a big proponent of that, because I feel like when people try our product, they really love it. And that's why I also like getting people into Spoken Wheel, which is one of our salon partners. But it's all about like just moving people along, and they hear a little bit more of the story, a little bit more of the story. You know, I've had a few people, it's kind of weird, where, you know, I go on and I check our analytics on our site. We're on Shopify. And there are some people that will come back like 20 times before they buy. And it's really, for me, it's really confusing, because, but, and it's hair care. It's not that complicated. Right? It's like, I'm not selling something really complicated, but I don't really know why, but there are a lot of people that just come back and back. And then at some point they get pushed over and decide to do it.
It's the new window shopping.
But
it's the new window. You know, it's like, how many times do you pass the dress at Bergdorf's before you actually say, I'm going to go in there and try that on. And then you try it on, and then, you know, it's that constant, you're thinking, and then something clicks. You're like, I need it right now. It's always an emergency.
It's so true. It's definitely been a little surprising for me, because I wasn't prepared to have people coming back and back and back 20 times. And then, you know, sometimes we have people that will hear about it once and buy immediately and buy everything and then buy again, you know, but I just find consumer behavior right now is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also different now with COVID. So it's evolving, and we're learning that too. And, you know, I think one of the things that brands have had to do with COVID is figure out how to not be tone deaf and actually have some empathy and change some of your messaging, so that, you know, instead of just saying, hey, buy our shampoo, it's like, you need some self-care. You know what I mean? It's just flipping some of the messaging around. So that's also, you know, a learning curve, and you're constantly evolving and pivoting and trying to figure out what works.
You know what I think is also fascinating about the numbers, how you said people will come to the website 20 times. That's great, because that means they're interested and they're engaged and that they're sticking. You know, that was a whole philosophy for all those years. Are they going to come back? It's that returning customer, that returning traffic. If they keep coming, then you're doing something right. Eventually they'll want to buy the product. But it is really interesting the way the consumer behavior and how people are responding and where they're responding, because they're everywhere today. Consumers are on every platform. Some may be more than others, but it is an interesting moment in time, especially with COVID, now that people have the time to really spend on social media and go down that rabbit hole, right? You know, you're following the trail. I think it's very interesting. I'm curious to see how your brand evolves and how it takes off. And as you keep doing these things, it sounds like you're on top of all of the amazing opportunities and platforms for free advertising, which is huge, right? That it's no longer something you have to pay for in that way. What do you think about that? I mean, and then taking it to the next level of converging with paid advertising. What are you thinking along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, we do a little bit of paid advertising on Facebook and Instagram because I think you kind of have to. It's just sort of price of entry. I wish there was a better platform, frankly, though, because I feel like the ROI is all over the place. We will have 1 week where it looks amazing and then the next week it's terrible. So it's like,
you don't know.
We're still trying to understand. And I think part of it is just the world we're in now is changing so much around us. And, you know, the last couple of weeks as people are trying to get their kids off to school and figure that all out, you know, they're not thinking about hair care so much. So there's a lot of external forces now that I think are driving more behavior than they did before. I mean, back to school is not new. It's just this year, back to school is a lot more stressful for most people, you know, because it's complicated. And if you have kids at home, my kids are older. I've got a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old, and they're doing online school, but they're self-sufficient. You know, I don't have to sit there, put them in front of the computer, make sure they're watching and paying attention. And I have a lot of, well, some of the people on my team and a lot of my friends that have younger kids are definitely feeling this stress of school situation these days, which, you know, again, as a brand, I think you have to just have that empathy to understand that it's not all about you. People have their own shit they're dealing with. And, you know, how can you add value amidst all that? So that's why I think the content piece becomes really important because, you know, you can be sharing insights, you can be sharing tips, you can be sharing how to look great on Zoom, which I don't always follow, but nonetheless, you know, so there's a lot of other things you can be sharing and giving people in terms of value, you know, besides just talking about your brand.
You know, you have such a rich background in, you know, advertising and helping to launch and create brands. You know, you launched in the pandemic, but I also know that you're on Amazon. So would love to hear about your experience with that, any tips you have and how that may have jumpstart, you know, everyone, the traffic there was definitely growing. Would love to hear a little bit more about your experience there. And also with the launch of luxury brands and, you know, how you're building a brand on it, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, I think Amazon is one of those necessary evils. You know what I mean? You kind of have to do it because that's, it's like what Abby was saying, you got to go where the people are. And people are on Amazon, so you kind of have to be there. Having said that, you know, I think you can try to build your brand story as much as possible using their A+ content and, you know, getting reviews and trying to maximize the Amazon experience. I will say working with Amazon for us was a little challenging. We had some trouble getting our inventory sorted out. And meaning we shipped a case of shampoo, a case of conditioner, and they inventoried them both as conditioner. Mm. And so people would buy the shampoo and get the conditioner and complain. And then Amazon was like, basically like, we're going to delist you because you've got too many complaints. I'm like, but it's because you guys screwed up the inventory. So it took me 3 months to get to the bottom of that. Because one of the challenges with working with Amazon is you really can't get a live person. It's really hard to find somebody to talk to. So you're going through the case log and submitting, you know, questions and hoping that they get back to you. And that's just a reality of what I think it is. But I think if you can get past that, you know, you can get yourself set up. We did not use an agency. We did it all ourselves. It's if you kind of like watch some of the tutorials, pick some brains of people that are already on there, figure out what works, you can do it without too much craziness, I think, and get up and running. So we're in the Amazon US and we're now trying to get up on Canada, Singapore, and Mexico. So that's my next challenge is figuring those out. because we've been approved, but you've got to still jump through hoops, get the certification around selling topicals and doing all that other stuff they require to get that running. But I think you kind of have to be there is my philosophy.
Yeah, I think you do too. Go where the fish are swimming.
Not everyone else is there yet, right? Because I know as a category, it's growing like crazy, yet not of all the brands are there. So I think there's this unique window of opportunity for people who get it right. But cool. Well, thanks for sharing.
Hey, Dresden, do you like to laugh?
Oh, Mark, heartily, heartily.
Elsie, do you like comedy?
Yeah.
I like to laugh at Elsie.
I know, me too. Well, you can listen to Funny People Talking every week. It's a podcast, and we talk about humor and comedy, and honestly, we can barely get through a commercial, but I promise you'll have a good time here, and we talk to amazing people, comedians, business leaders, inspiring people about their lives and about humor, about comedy. We play improv games.
Babble.
We babble. We talk about...
You'll be inspired and you'll laugh. That's why he has a co-host.
We have... That's right. We have great food, celebrity stories, and we always play an improv game. So come on by. You'll have a great time. Funny People Talking, wherever the best podcasts are found.
And now it's Hitting the Pan.
It's at this point in our show where we ask our guest some personal questions, and it's called Hitting the Pan, and we spin this salon chair, which will land on one of us, and we will ask you something that makes you happy or to get a little bit more insight into your day-to-day and your personal journey. So I'm going to spin the salon chair. Where's that chair? And you know what? It landed on Karen.
So
you're on.
Lynn, my question for you is, what's like a personal passion that you have that you want to, like in your free time, like learn more about or do? Like a hobby or something new that you want to learn?
Well, as I said earlier, I'm like kind of a crazy person that likes to do lots of things. And I don't know if you guys have ever read like the Love Signs book or any of those things. It's like how you're motivated and what things sort of, you know, make you feel appreciated and things. And I'm all about productivity. I just like to do stuff and get stuff done and make stuff. So we actually have another business, which is a luxury home fragrance, bee-powered fragrance business. Because it is using beeswax from Dominica and creating a luxury candle. It's called Isle de Nature, ISLE, D Nature. And one of the things that we did when we were setting up that business is I set up hives in our house.
Wow.
Because I'm like, well,
that,
you know.
That is to another level crazy. Of authenticity.
That's
okay.
That's crazy.
It's like, for me, it's like, it's hard for me to have a conversation with somebody about the wax and the supply chain and the things that go into it if I don't understand like firsthand how it's done. Wow. So I put up hives. The first time I set them up, I had to go pick up the bees.
Okay, so okay. That's what I wanted to know. Like, I just wanted to make sure you were outside. They were outside somewhere.
No. So we're in the Berkshires. We have a lot of land. Okay. We had to go pick up the bees. It was a long day because I had to drop my husband at the bees, pick him up. And so by the time I got home, the bees were agitated. I didn't know that they would be so agitated. So I went to go put them all in the frames and I had the suit. I got the suit. I'm at least not a complete, you know, idiot about that. I was like, I know I need the suit, but it's basically a top and a hat and it zips. And then you have jeans on. What I didn't realize is the bees were really pissed off at me and I went to put them in 10 times on my legs, like within like a minute. So I took a little break. I went inside. I like deep, you know, breath. Okay. And then I was like, I just have to go do it. So I went back out and I just like as fast as I could, transferred all the bees into the hives, got all of it set. And then from then on, I've not gotten stung. They've been great. And there's so many things that I mean, the questions that I would ask, I have a bee guy who lives by me that gives me advice. And I'm literally like a complete idiot. I'm like, so which one's the queen? how does that work?
You. Like,
but that's anyway. So that's my sort of fun. I'm using air quotes on fun hobby. That I'm kind of into these days. And we're the cool thing about it is we're almost at a honey harvesting point. So that's at least the reward for dealing with all the bee stings and whatnot is you get the honey.
I just have to note, like, the common thread I'm seeing in these two stories is like a kind of authenticity around vertical farming and, you know, all the way down to like transparency of the ingredient, how it's made. But then also, if you think about kelp farms and honeybees, those are two really important areas around preservation for our oceans. Like kelp farms are becoming a big thing, or like there's more, you know, people talking about how it's helpful because it's absorbing the acidity of the water and stuff like that. And then the whole honeybee issue we're facing right now. So it's super interesting. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. And actually, the point you're bringing up is kind of why we started that business, because we were down in Dominica and they had been decimated by Hurricane Maria and lost a lot of the bee population down there. And, you know, you kind of, one of those things where you're like, wow, that's kind of an issue. Like, nobody really talks about it, but the climate change catastrophes, the tsunami in Japan, by the way, it was 2011, and it hit the bay that we get our makabu from, and it still hasn't fully recovered. Like, they are still dealing with issues of sea urchin infestations and all sorts of stuff, and Dominica hasn't fully recovered. So it is, that is a big driver, I think, and a motivator for what we're doing, because it's a little scary when you start to dig into that.
Like, for our earth, and it's just, I mean, I've been learning a lot more about some of this stuff, but it's super interesting. Like, fun fact, 80% of crops in the U.S. are dependent on honeybees, but we're having this issue. And so you think about the impact it has on our whole food supply chain and just how everything is so interconnected. It's kind of crazy to think about. So it's good that brands are being more conscious around educating consumers and the market, but also creating socially responsible brands that are actually helping, you know, to harvest and create ingredients that are good for the earth in other ways too. So,
yeah, I love that. So I'm going to spin that salon chair again, and it's just going to land on me. Actually, it's not a salon chair. It's a kitchen chair, and because I'm sitting in my kitchen, and we're all virtual now. So I am going to go down a different path. I totally get your spirit and your energy, and you're on so many different amazing projects, and bravo, because it's a very exciting time for you with these brands. But you said you have two sons, and they're living in your home. And I'm curious to know, because you were in beauty and advertising and went down that men's grooming, and now you're in beauty, how do you, are they really into the grooming and all of that kind of cool stuff?
So I actually
have a young age.
Yeah, I have a son and a daughter. So I've got a 19-year-old son and a 17-year-old daughter. And I am all about blending my work and my life. Like, I don't think about balance at all. I just think I want to work with my friends and I make my kids do stuff for the businesses. And that's just the way it is. So I dragged my daughter, she was 16 at the time, to Indie Beauty Expo last year in LA and made her work the booth with her little Masami shirt. But she literally sat there on the phone the entire time, like total teenager. And she did absorb some stuff, because afterwards she was like, oh, that one woman that came up was asking good questions. And I was like, so she was listening, even though she's pretending she wasn't listening. But I would say my kids are kind of, it's almost like you want to sort of steer away from what your parents did. You know, they're the people that embrace that, and then the people that like want to go the opposite direction. I would say my kids have kind of wanted to go the opposite direction. Like, they just, are, you know, they're both very like cynical about advertising. Mm-hmm. I dragged my son to Cannes Lions when he was 15, and he literally was like, "You people are pathetic. You just talk about yourselves and give each other awards." He was like, "It's so lame." And I was sort of like, "Oh, he's kind of right." So it's been interesting because they are sort of ancillarily involved in the businesses when I drag them in to help me with something, but it's not their passion. And beauty definitely, well, my daughter, she experiments a lot. She's got right now bright pink hair.
Oh God, that's great.
Yeah. So she's an experimenter. So that's been really fun to just see her do that. And live vicariously through her, because I'm not going to be dyeing my hair pink anytime soon.
Well, it is a different generation. I mean, that's speaking to, you know, the way the younger generation looks at our world and the world that we built or that we were a part of. This is really a time of disruption in every sense of the word. So we're really paving the way for their future. I have a bunch of kids too. So it'll be very interesting to see. They're very aware. They're very knowledgeable. But Lynn, at this point in the show, it's been wonderful learning about your journey and your personal story and your professional story. And would love to offer the opportunity to our audience to get in touch with you if they have questions. Can you share how they can reach you?
Sure. I'm super easy to find. I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can also email me at lynn@lovemasumi.com. And my social handle is Lynn Powered. So it's just my name with ED at the end. And then Masumi is on all of our social channels at Love Masumi Hair. It's the same handle on everything. So that's how you can find us.
Fantastic. And if you could leave us with one thought about whatever is on your top of your mind right now, that would be great.
You know, don't give up when things are like feeling like business is questionable or unpredictable, or you just don't know where things are headed. I found a lot of help and support with other female founders. So build a network, get advice, and just persevere, because we will all get through this. It may look different at the other side, but I think it's easy to get a little sort of, you know, depressed day in, day out, but try to take a bigger view and stick with it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Abby Wallach with my beautiful co-host, Karen Moon.
Thanks for joining us today.
And we'll see you next time on Beauty is Your Business.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Copyright 2020. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network, and find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is Mouth Media Network. Amplify and connect.